What's the difference between DIY and doing it yourself? It's the difference between a part-time passion and a full-time business. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and the business tools you need to succeed. Let your ideas flow with AI that guides you but keeps you in the driver's seat. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Do it yourself. Go to Wix.com. You know where your business would be without you. Imagine where it could go with more of you. Well, with Wix, you can create a website with more of your vision, your voice, your expertise. Wix gives you the freedom to truly own your brand and do it on your own, with full customization and advanced AI tools that help turn your ideas into reality. Scale up without being held back by cookie-cutter solutions and grow your business into your online brand. Because without you, your business is just business as usual. Take control. Go to Wix.com.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day. Calling all surgical education junkies. Behind the Knife is looking to add new fellows to our team this year. We are thrilled to be adding these positions as we've got big plans for the future, and we want you to be a part of them. We're working on countless projects that will make a real impact on surgical education, including a modern, engaging general surgery curriculum and slick new videos. We're looking for enterprising surgical residents to take the bull by the horns and build something new and exciting. Fellows will benefit from ample support from the Behind the Knife team, including the use of our brand new digital education platform and access to all of our resources like illustrators, video editing, social media, and more. Get your name out there and build your CV by being part of the number one surgery education platform in the world. We're offering a two-year fellowship starting in July 2025 and ending in June 2027. Only residents beginning their two-year academic development time will be considered, and the residents' institutions and mentors must approve of this fellowship. Check out the show notes for the application link. All applications are due April 20th. Again, all applications are due on April 20th. Dominate the day.
Okay, welcome back to Behind the Knife. This is Kevin here, and I'm lucky enough today to have Larry Keller with me. Larry Keller is an insurance agent out of New York, and he has all of the qualifications to include CFP, CLU, and a bunch of others, and he is a true expert at basically any type of insurance that a doctor would need. And there's been a lot of changes in the insurance industry as of late, and we had him on previously to learn a little bit about disability, a very important thing for us, especially us surgeons. And today we're going to have, it's be a part one of a two-part episode, where the first one we discuss sort of the basics of disability insurance, and then the next one we talk about a guaranteed standard issue. So make sure you listen to our second podcast to learn about guaranteed standard issue. But Larry, if you can take it away and tell us about why buying an insurance policy and picking the right one is as easy as 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, if you guys can do medicine, especially surgery, you know, buying long-term disability insurance, you know, really is pretty easy. And I know of all the consumers that are marketed to, I would say physicians and dentists are probably the number one and number two, you know, in that order. So let's say disability insurance is something that you're thinking about. And disability insurance really just protects your income and gives you money in the event you're too sick or too hurt to work. That is really what disability insurance comes down to. And unless you have a significant amount of money put aside, buying disability insurance is one of the most efficient ways to actually go out and protect your income. Because especially if you're early in your career, Kevin, we know this. I mean, the majority of your assets is really you. It's all in your head and it's all in your hands. And you've spent a tremendous amount of time and money in your education, your training, and your experience. And if something goes wrong, whether it's an accident or a sickness, you know, even the best laid financial plans will come to a screeching halt.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can tell you, I remember as an early trainee thinking, you know, I feel great. Like, even by the second year, first year of fellowship, you know, vascular surgeons, we wear headlights, we wear loops, we wear lead. I was starting to have some aches and pains, and it really made me happy that I, you know, was protected. And so I think this is, I'm sure it's pertinent for all doctors, but especially surgeons, protecting all the work that we've put in is such an important thing.
Yeah, so now we go out and we say, you know what? These guys seem to make sense. We got a vascular surgeon, we have an insurance guy out there. You know, what do I actually do if I'd like to explore long-term disability insurance? So the first thing that we might do is see if our employer is providing us with any coverage. And we know the majority of residency and fellowship programs aren't going to give their trainees long-term disability coverage. Most of the hospitals or large employers or multi-specialty clinics are also going to provide long-term disability coverage for their attending physicians. So where that is good, I wouldn't necessarily say I would want that to be the foundation of my coverage, because if I leave that hospital or I finish my training as I will, typically that coverage is not going to come with me. If I'm hurt on the job and I receive benefits for workers' compensation, you know, that will offset my benefit. If I'm really disabled and I'm receiving Social Security disability benefits, generally that's going to offset my employer's long-term disability policy. And then if I'm not a trainee and I'm actually practicing, one big thing about group insurance is it's limited. So it might say something like, well, Kevin, if you were in active duty and you were working for a large medical center, we're going to give you 60% of your salary with a maximum monthly benefit of X. So let's say that that X is $10,000. Well, 60% of what number is going to give me $120,000 a year, which is $10,000 a month? And the answer we know is $200,000. Well, we also know typically if the insurance is being provided to you by your employer, they're going to take an income tax deduction for the benefits that they're providing to an employee, which is you. And as a result of that, short of them adding the premiums that are being paid on your behalf back to your taxable income, that benefit becomes taxable to you. So now I'm at 60%, but it's only 60%, which was protecting an income of $200,000. Wait a second, I'm earning a lot more than that. I have no protection for that excess. And even that $10,000 a month that I'm getting, that's a taxable benefit. And 60% is less than 100%. Where is that additional money going to come from? So your individual plan is typically used to make up for the taxes that you might lose on a group insurance plan, make up for the earnings that you have in excess of this cap. And then in the event you were to change jobs, this is your individual portable policy that you take with you. So that's the main reason that you're looking for an individual policy. So now you go to the internet, right? That's what we all do. It's time for me to do some homework. I type in disability insurance for vascular surgeons. I type in disability insurance for physicians. And I step to see a whole bunch of sponsored ads. But then I also see a whole bunch of websites that say, request a quote. So I do that. I start requesting quotes from multiple agents that are on the internet. I don't necessarily know who these agents are, but they're going to be able to at least get me started in terms of a cost versus a benefit. So other than price, which is what we all know, really, where should we start? And I always say, let's start with the end in mind. What is it that I think I want to buy? And rather than focusing in what's the same, let's focus in on what's different, because that's going to lead me potentially from I like policy A, I don't necessarily like policy B. So we'll focus in on these differences first. Then we'll come in, we'll talk about what is similar. And then we can pivot to that second episode, which is really going to be important for residents, fellows, and recent graduates, talking specifically about guaranteed standard issue or GSI disability insurance, where you can buy that regardless of your health. There's either no medical questions at all, or maybe there's a couple of gatekeeper questions just to make it a barrier to entry. but it's not like fully underwritten where you're applying, you're answering medical questions. Behind the scenes, there's a prescription drug canvas so we can see what you're taking and we can ask you why you're taking that. We can request a copy of your medical records. There's a HIPAA-compliant authorization in there and we can see what you have seen your physicians for. We can learn about your prior medical history. We can learn about surgeries that you might have had. So this allows you to bypass that step almost entirely and lock into a very high quality policy at a discount. So I go to the internet. I've got these agents sending quotes to me. The first thing that I would say you should know is you are better than a spreadsheet. You are a physician. You are a surgeon. You are at the top of the food chain. And you can basically have any insurance agent that you want go to work on your behalf. But what do you get? You get a spreadsheet, which has the company logos on it, a grid as to how one policy might compare to another on a very limited basis. And it really signifies what an insurance agent might think is important to you, but it might not be at all what is important to you. So without necessarily knowing what to ask, you might ultimately make a very important decision based on very limited information. So we want to avoid that. I mean, Kevin, I guess it's almost like going to one of your patients, telling them you're going to wheel them down to the operating room, and by the time they're done, they're going to come out great. But you didn't necessarily explain to them the complications of the surgery and the risks that go along with it. If you did, I'd like to think they'd still go with you. But maybe they would take a pause and say, maybe I should ask him something else. Or what are the complications associated with this procedure, potentially?
Do you recommend getting multiple quotes from multiple agents?
I generally don't. I mean, what you'll find is this, is disability insurance, life insurance, it's kind of like an iPhone. Like the price is the price. And the only way that one agent can beat out another is to know of or have access to an exclusive program like a guaranteed standard issue plan or an exclusive discount. Otherwise, if two different agents structure the policy the same way, they're going to come back to you and the cost is going to be exactly the same. Now, you might find agents are not all created equal. You might find that one agent has been in the industry a lot longer. They have a lot more knowledge compared to another one. You might find that the personality of one agent gels with you a lot more than the personality of another agent. But from a product standpoint, for the most part, the price really is the price. So someone could come to someone like me that's been doing this a very, very long time and is very experienced, or they can go to, you know, their friend from high school that's been in the industry for, you know, all of 3 weeks. They're calling on their friends and family members. They saw that you're a physician. They're all excited. And the price is going to be the same, but the experience might actually be very different.
And so how do you know that you're choosing, you know, an advisor that you can trust?
Well, a lot of times it comes down to like you'll ask for referrals from, you know, friends and colleagues. If it's me, I would ask, well, what are your credentials? You know, how long have you been doing this? How many people do you work with in my medical specialty? How many physicians do you have as clients? Are there specialties that you tend to like to work with more than others, right? And then I would go with this. Experience dictates. So there was a study done. It's basically like the agent and financial professional retention study. And the last one that was done, I believe, was 2022. And we looked at it and we said, for every 100 agents that come into the financial world, 85 of them are gone within the first 4 years. Now, imagine if medical school was like this, like your class of 100, I would say, 95 are going to graduate. The five that didn't, maybe two thought it was too difficult. They just couldn't hack it. One wanted to be a dentist. One wanted to be an MBA. And one wanted to go be an attorney. And they knew right away this was not right for them. But once you graduate, the odds are very good that you're going to match. You're going to practice medicine and surgery in some way, shape, or form, and you're off and running. It's unfortunately, it's just not the same in the insurance and financial planning industry. So you're right. A lot of it is, who are you talking to? And a lot of times, unless you know the questions to ask or you do your research, you don't know. In fact, there's some pretty well-known websites that are out there, and you look for the agents, and there's no biographies there. There's no names of the agents. So you're just requesting quotes from some nebulous agent that you don't know what you're going to get. And that's a real problem. So other than price, other than quality of agent or experience, here are some things that you should know. So the first one is pretty big these days, especially post-COVID, is how are claims handled when they're related to mental or nervous conditions or substance abuse disorders? So I know, Kevin, when I think mental or nervous conditions, I don't think like a physician. I think like an insurance guy. So to me, a mental or nervous condition is anxiety, depression, stress, chemical dependency, drug addiction, or burnout. Well, in a lot of cases, depending upon the state that you're in and the company you're looking at, I might have a choice where I can have a policy that has a limitation for these psychiatry-based claims, or I can choose unlimited coverage for psychiatric-based claims. So if I'm okay with the limitation and I look at it and I say, I've made it this far, I haven't had any issues yet, I don't expect to have any issues, if I can save a little bit of money by having a limitation for these types of claims, I am willing to bear that risk. And typically, you're either going to get paid for 24 months over your lifetime or 24 months per episode of disability. But the really bad stuff is not going to be limited, even if you opted for a limitation. So dementia as a result of a stroke, a trauma, head injury, viral infection, MS, Parkinson's. I can no longer do vascular surgery because of a physical condition. And now I'm depressed. Well, that's not good, but your physical condition is what's causing your inability to do your job. Your benefit is not going to be limited. But note, short of a GSI plan, if you have ADD, ADHD, if you're in therapy, if you're taking an SSRI, likely you're going to get an exclusion rider on your policy where we tell you, based on your medical history, we are not going to provide you with any coverage for claims resulting from mental or nervous conditions that are psychiatric based. So just be prepared for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I have one slight question that kind of goes back to the previous point we were talking about. Is picking the right insurance agent important because they can help you navigate getting a claim should you need one? Like, is that part of your job or is that not part of your job?
It's part of the job. I mean, experience will dictate. You know, a lot of times the insurance companies really don't want the agents or brokers involved in the claims process because we're always going to take the word of our client over that of the insurance company. But we're certainly there to assist in the claims process. We can very often tell a client, well, these are the provisions of your policy, and based on what you're describing to me, this is the way your policy might pay you. We'll usually get you the claim forms or get the claim form sent out to you. We'll ask you about what happened, you know, accident or sickness. When did you last work full time? When did you go back to work or you were able to work on a limited basis? And that will tie into some of the policy provisions. So I think an experienced agent can really never hurt you. It can only help you not only in navigating the policy to buy, but going through the claims process. Because we've typically done this multiple times for multiple clients. And if it's the first time, again, the odds are good. You're probably not going to have the same experience dealing with someone that's inexperienced or newly minted compared to someone that is very experienced. Right. So in that mental nervous world, Let's assume that you have the ability to buy unlimited coverage, or you can choose to opt for a limitation. It's probably going to be one of two schools of thought. Number one is, I made it this far. I don't have any issues. I have no personal history. I have no family history. I'm going to be okay with a limitation. That's the route that I'm going to take. Now, typically, you have a choice. Except if you're in California, the state of California, every policy has a limitation. In the state of New York, one company only has a limited option. So if you want unlimited, you probably wouldn't buy from that company. Or you might say, you know, if the difference is 10% or 15%, essentially I'm giving up the discount for the limitation. You know, I don't know what I don't know. I'm buying it for the unknown. I would just assume have unlimited. The other times that you see unlimited not being available is typically to anesthesiologists and emergency medicine physicians, just based on prior claims experience history for those medical specialties. Make sense?
Yeah, no, sounds good. And is it typically what, like, I think even my policy, like, typically 2 years is the typical mental nervous substance abuse? Like, is that kind of a okay statement?
Yeah, I would say that that's the general rule. And then you can opt for unlimited if you want that. Some companies come with the limitation. And like I said, you can opt for unlimited. Some come unlimited, and then you can opt for the limitation and the savings that goes along with it. And again, your worst case scenario is if you do have a medical history in that mental nervous area, even if it's just, you know, general anxiety, depression, ADD, ADHD, then you're likely going to get an exclusion rider for those types of claims regardless, and then you really don't have a choice.
And Larry, have we talked about own occupation yet and what that means?
We're going to come back to that in the similar area. We're going to go with the next one, which is in the area where things might differ. So the second one is, well, how are claims handled if you're disabled and you choose to reside overseas? And this could become really, really relevant for those that have a visa, right? An H-1B or a J-1 visa. So for the most part, if you are a visa holder, the insurance companies are either not going to pay benefits outside the United States or Canada, or they're going to specifically state, we will not pay benefits in your country of citizenship. So in the event you lost your sponsorship, your visa is now gone and you have to return home, your best case scenario is your benefits are typically going to be limited. Now, Guardian, which is a unique company in the fact that they say if you're in all but a handful of states, they will give you a policy, and that policy is essentially going to say, Kevin, because you're a visa holder, if your disability starts in the United States, and now you have to return to your country of citizenship because you've lost your sponsorship, if your disability started in the United States and now you have to return, we are going to continue to pay you with no limitation at all. By the same token, if you were at home, let's say you were visiting family in your country of citizenship, you left, but then you had tickets to come back to the United States within 31 days of your leaving, Guardian considers this to be incidental travel. And now if you're disabled overseas and you can't make it back, but you have proof that you left and you were returning within 31 days of the time you left, you will still continue to receive benefits overseas with no limitation. Now, this holds true in all states except for California, Delaware, Florida, Montana, my home state, New York, North Dakota, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Wyoming. So if I'm a visa holder or I'm married to someone that's not from the United States, and if I became disabled, their whole support system is in their country of citizenship, I would want to make sure, if at all possible, my policy would allow me to leave the United States and receive benefits. But for a visa holder, as the insured, the only company that will do this for an extended period of time is Guardian, with the exception of those states that I mentioned. Once someone is a green card holder or they become a U.S. citizen, then if the policy itself normally allows you to reside overseas, that's okay. But for a visa holder, this can be really, really important. It could be the difference of becoming disabled in the United States and receiving benefits outside the United States on an unlimited basis, or your benefits ending after a very limited period of time. Typically, 12 months is the longest.
Okay. So as you said, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. And so the first thing we have to consider, one of the main things is, you know, how we want to handle claims related to mental, nervous, or substance abuse. The second thing is about receiving benefits while overseas. And so there's one more thing that varies a lot between policy to policy.
Yes. So this one is, if you're buying your policy and you're an early career physician, maybe you're a resident or fellow, or maybe you're, you know, first couple of years of practice, and you know your income is only going to continue to go up. But your health, that we don't know. So the worst thing that can happen is your income is rising, your health is declining. You're not dead, but you're not as good as you used to be. So let's say you're an orthopedic surgeon and you developed a shoulder problem and you had one of your friends take care of you and they did surgery. Everything worked out great, but there's hardware in your shoulder now. If you didn't have a disability insurance policy already, you would get a policy if you met the requirements otherwise, but you're also going to get an exclusion rider stating we will not pay benefits for disease, disorder, treatment, or complication related to your right shoulder. Well, if you bought your policy before you had the surgery and you didn't have any issues and it subsequently developed, if you have an increase option on your policy that allows you to buy more coverage in the future, regardless of your health, as your income is rising, guess what? Your shoulder is going to be covered the same way as your original policy covered your shoulder. That's an ideal situation. So there's two types of increase options, and I can make an argument for either one. So the first one is the one that I grew up on. This is called the Future Increase Option Rider. We love acronyms in insurance. It's not just for medicine. It's not just for the military. We love it also. So we're going to use the term FIO. And really what you're doing here is you're paying for the right to be able to buy additional coverage regardless of your health as your income is going up. And because you're paying for it, you cannot lose your option. Every single year it's going to be available to you. You can choose to use it or not use it. So if you called me and you're like, my new income is X, you know the amount of insurance I already have with you because you're my agent. You know about my group insurance policy through my hospital because I've provided it to you, or you know. Well, I could tell you that you're eligible for more coverage. Great news. You have a $10,000 benefit currently per month. You're eligible for another $5,000. That can bring you to $15,000. This is what the additional cost is going to be if you want to elect that. You could say, that's great. I was just kicking the tires. I don't want to buy any more insurance. It's nice to know that I qualify for more. It's nice to know what the cost is. I'm not doing anything. That's fine. Next year, you're going to get the very same notification of your increase option. We can have a very similar conversation. And if you decide that you want to buy some of that additional $5,000 benefit, none of that additional $5,000, or something in between, you can do that. You can basically make your own decision. So the negative is you have to pay for the increase option itself to have the right to be able to do it. But the positive is you can't lose your increase option, and there's really nothing that you need to do in order to keep it on your policy. Well, there's another type of increase option, and Principal created this. Standard Insurance Company was good enough to borrow this and make it their only increase option. Then you've got Mass Mutual in most of the states, actually in all of the states. They make available both the FIO rider and what I'm going to talk about now, the alternate increase option. In some states, Emeritus makes both of them available. And what you'll also find in some states, actually all of them, Guardian makes both of them available. So let's say that we were meeting really early. You were a PGY1 general surgery resident. And I'm like, Kevin, you know, you really should buy disability insurance. It's really important. Your entire financial life is going to be dependent upon what's in your mind and your ability to perform surgery. And you're like, Larry, it's my first year. The only thing I really need to know is like three things. Where is the cafeteria? Where is the OR? And where is the men's room? Other than that, there's really not too much that I need to know. I really am not interested in disability insurance. I get that it might be important. I'm not there yet. And I would come back to you and say, Kevin, I know you're not there yet, but I know that you've heard about disability insurance and you could buy this policy that has an increase option and pay for that. But if you're a PGY1 and you're going to be training for years, do you really want to pay for an increase option that you're not going to be able to use until you're almost done with your training at the time you have the least amount of money? Like, that's probably not a great strategy. And you might say, that's probably not a great strategy. What do you have? So I would say, well, there's an alternate increase option that you can have at no cost. And it could get you to the same level or even higher than what the FIO rider will allow you to reach. But because we're given to you at no cost, we require that you check in with us, typically every 3 years. And at that point, we're going to ask you, who are you? Where do you work? What do you do? What have you earned so far this year? What did you earn last year? Do you have any other disability insurance besides this policy? And we're going to look to determine if you qualify for more coverage. Well, if you don't, there's nothing else you need to do. You're literally only checking in to be turned down to keep your increase option alive for continued use. But if you are eligible for more coverage, at that point, you must purchase at least half of what is available. So same example, if I tell you, Kevin, you're eligible for another $5,000 and you have this increase option, which is either called the Benefit Update Rider or the BU, the Maximize Your Benefit Rider or the MYB, the Benefit Increase Rider or the BIR, you have to buy at least half. So if you don't check in or you don't buy at least half of that $5,000, you're going to lose your increase option. It's going to be removed from your policy. And in many cases, you will not be able to add it back to your policy. So at that point, if you want more, you have to buy a new policy from the same company or another company and really go through the process again to supplement it. So there's two schools of thought here. Number one is I'd rather just pay for my increase option. I know I can't lose it. There's nothing I need to do or don't need to do to keep it on there. When I want to buy more, I'll let you know. The other school is I don't want to pay for an increase option, especially if it's really early in my career and I won't be able to use it for years. I'd rather take the money I would have spent on the increase option and use it to buy more insurance under the no-cost increase option. But again, the no-cost increase option, you generally have to check in and you have to buy at least half of what you're eligible for. If you don't check in after multiple attempts, or you don't buy at least half if you are eligible, you're going to lose your increase option. So it really comes down to those three things. How do my claims get looked upon for mental and nervous conditions? How are my claims handled if I'm disabled and I choose to reside outside the United States or Canada? And what type of increase option do I really want in my policy? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And so once you have those three pieces of information from the person you're working with, then you figure out in which state they live in and all the other things. Then you figure out which company is the best fit for them. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's basically my decision tree. And a lot of times I'm going to provide illustrations of coverage in advance, you know, which has the pricing based on age and gender and state of residence and medical specialty. And then I'm going to highlight these differences. So if you're listening to this and I sent you illustrations of coverage and you're like, I don't want to have something where I need to buy a minimal amount of coverage or I need to check in. Well, you know, the companies that only make that available as their increase option, you're probably not going to want. Very easy. And then we look at everything else that we know and we navigate to price. And what am I getting in terms of cost savings if I'm opting for policy A versus policy B? Or what am I getting if I'm willing to pay more in terms of policy A versus policy B? And then the other things that we want to have in our policy is what you said. We want to have own occupation. That's our definition of disability. Some people will use the term own specialty. Technically, own specialty is not correct because it's always based on what are you doing and how has an accident or sickness impacted your ability to do what you used to do. So if I'm a vascular surgeon and I can no longer perform my job duties as a vascular surgeon due to an accident or sickness, ideally, I want my policy to pay me my full benefit, even if I can transition into another occupation or another medical specialty, whether it's using my education, training, and experience or not. It literally is almost like a second license to work in your specialty if an accident or sickness takes that away.
Yeah. Okay. No, I've definitely. And so I could work as a VA. Like in the military, we have all these docs that evaluate people for VA claims or something like that. If I was a or teach in a medical school or some examples. Hey, Larry, before we wrap up this first one thing I always wondered when listening to these podcasts, I'm gonna put you on the hot seat a little bit here. Give our residents sort of a ballpark. I know it's different whether you're male or female and your specialty, but say they're looking for kind of a general low cost option that has some type of future rider in it. What type of monthly fees are people going to be paying here?
Yeah, I'm going to say somewhere between $100 and $150 a month. I would say the $100 would be more for your male physicians. $150 might be more for your female physicians. Rates for females are higher due to pregnancy and complications of pregnancy, due to a higher rate of autoimmune disorders. And believe it or not, due to a higher incidence of mental/nervous and or substance abuse disorders. And then different insurance companies will classify different medical specialties differently. You might also find that a company like Guardian has what's called a graded premium, where it's lower in the beginning. Each year gets a little bit more expensive, but you always have the ability to switch from an annually increasing rate to a fixed rate. And this is really where the expertise of the insurance agent comes in, because we can easily modify the policy to meet your individual needs and goals and philosophy. That way, having some coverage is certainly better than having no coverage. And some companies allow you to start with a really low benefit and a really low premium and still have the ability to ramp up to as much as $20,000 or $30,000 a month. So you really can, I call this the lease with the option to buy plan, but you can do that also. Like, most important thing is we lock in the fact that you're in good health. We lock in the fact that you have your policy. And then when your finances change, you adjust the policy accordingly. The only other things that we would look for is a partial disability benefit. So as good as own occupation is, it's kind of like being pregnant, right? You either are or you're not. So in your case, look, Kevin, you're either working as a vascular surgeon or you're not. But if your doctor says, Kevin, I got to tell you, like, you don't look great, man, but you don't look horrible. You could still work as a vascular surgeon, but you have to work fewer hours per day. You got to work fewer days per week. You got to do fewer cases and see fewer patients. Well, odds are pretty good your practice or hospital is going to pay you less money. Well, own occupation doesn't do anything about less money. It only does the inability to do your job, and that's when you get paid. So this piece, the residual or partial benefit, takes away the all or nothing and introduces the loss of income component. So if you're never totally disabled, or you were totally disabled and now you go back to work on a limited basis, now you're going to get benefits typically proportionate to your loss of income. Then we want to have a cost of living adjustment rider. Again, think about the military, a COLA rider. And this is going to increase your benefit after disability has lasted for 12 months. This is going to help maintain your purchasing power. And early on in your career, when you have a lengthy career horizon ahead of you, not a lot of money, possibly a whole lot of debt, this is really important. But as your situation changes and you get older and the number of years that you can receive benefits under your policy goes down, you might consider removing the cost of living adjustment rider from your policy. Maybe you even consider extending the waiting period, which is kind of like your deductible of time before benefits become payable.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I was just sort of sometimes when I was getting early with my finances, I looked at these financial waterfalls for both the resident and the attending. And really on both charts, as a resident, it says the first thing on the entire financial waterfall, even before your 401k, is to secure disability insurance. And then on the attending waterfall, it says to increase disability insurance. So this is from outside people. This is really thought, especially, you know, we're not getting paid till we're 35 years old sometimes, really ensuring that we're going to have the high income that we've earned. And so this is a really important thing for people to take serious and to look into.
Yeah, I mean, no one ever thinks that they're going to be the person that's disabled. I mean, I can tell you, if I wasn't in this industry, would I be hypersensitive to this? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, as much as we love what we do, we're really nothing more than highly educated, highly motivated, money-making machines. And if the machine breaks down and you insure the machine, you're going to likely be okay. If the machine breaks down and you didn't insure the machine, you just insured the stuff that you had, well, at that point, even the best laid financial plans might come to a screeching halt. So I could not agree with you more. I would say if you make it out of residency and you did nothing more than buy an individual disability policy, if you're married, if you have a family history, if you have someone that depends upon your income, like kids or parents, buy a term life insurance policy. Maybe start your investing or get an emergency fund set up and have your employment contract reviewed before you get your first job by a qualified healthcare attorney. You've done about as well as you could do.
Absolutely. And sorry, one step back is, in your personal experience, when people do go on disability, what percent of them are using it for a year, 2 years, 3 years to get back on the horse versus, you know, like my career is over and I, you know, I'm done?
Yeah, I've had a mix of both of them. I think the last I checked, the average length of a claim is about 2.5 years. But I can tell you a bunch of surgeons that come to mind that are never going to be able to work again as a surgeon. And they're in their 40s and 50s, like late 40s, early 50s, some it's earlier 40s. Insurance really is just about the law of large numbers. It's a lot of people paying premium for those that become disabled and actually need the benefits. It's nothing more than a pooling of risk. And it's one of those things that you really have to do to make sure that your income is covered, unless you have other sources. If you say, I'm a trust fund baby, I've got plenty of money, then I would say maybe you don't necessarily need disability insurance. But if you're working because you have to work and you need the income that's generated by your job, I would say you probably need disability insurance, and buying insurance is really one of the most efficient ways that you can do it. I mean, the other ways to do it is, you know, you rely on friends and family members, or you have enough assets put aside and you have reached financial independence. And if you never work another day in your life, it doesn't matter, then you probably don't need your disability insurance anymore.
So, Larry, if people want to use your expertise and your, I don't know, 30, 40 years in the field to find the right disability insurance policy for them, how do they find you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty easy to find. They can email me. It's lkeller, L-K-E-L-L-E-R, at physician.com/financialservices, all spelled out, .com. They can always call 516-677-6211. And I would say exactly that, like, use me as a resource. You know, I'm happy to review policies that you might be considering. I'm happy to review policies that you might already have to see if you could potentially do better. I'm happy to review policies and see if your situation has changed. Maybe you can make some changes to your existing policy in order to provide more coverage or to better meet your individual needs, goals, and philosophy.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Larry. And to all our listeners out there, especially the residents and fellows, make sure you tune into part two, as there's been major shifts in the insurance industry that you need to hear about regarding guaranteed standard issue plans. And so make sure you listen for episode two with Larry Keller. Larry, thanks for joining today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This podcast is intended for general public use and is for informational purposes only. The Behind the Knife podcast is not affiliated with or endorsed by Park Avenue Securities, Guardian, or Physician Financial Services, and opinions stated are their own. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should only be relied upon when coordinated with professional advice. Lawrence B. Keller is a registered representative and financial advisor of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, PAS, OSJ 355, Lexington Avenue, 9th floor, New York, New York, 10017-212-541-8800. Security, products, and advisory services are offered through PAS member FINRA SIPC. Financial representative, the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America, Guardian, New York, New York, PAS is wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. AR insurance license number 1057229, California insurance license number 0C37340. Physician Financial Services is not an affiliate or subsidiary of PAS or Guardian. 7562131.1, expiration 127.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.
It's Ram Truck Month. Hurry into your local Ram dealer for great deals on the trucks built to help you drive your own story. Like Ram 1500, Motor Trend's 2025 Truck of the Year. And right now, purchase and get $7,250 combined cash allowance, plus get $1,250 bonus cash allowance when financed on the 2025 Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab. Go to ram.com and hurry to Ram Truck Month today. Financing for well-qualified buyers through Stellantis Financial Services. Not all customers will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Take retail delivery by 3/31/2025.
Popeyes has the wings you crave as a meal, for a snack, or to fill the table at your next party. Crunchy, spicy bone-in wings or tender, white meat boneless wings are seasoned to perfection in Louisiana herbs and spices, and then tossed in so many different amazing flavors that you can't tell if one is better than the last. Pick your wing, choose your sauce, and savor all the flavor possibilities. It's the best of both wings, and they're only at Popeyes.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
At participating U.S. restaurants.